From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. California is approaching 1,300 deaths from COVID-19. The number of people who died from this disease had risen 5% yesterday from the day before. Governor Gavin Newsom outlined the key statistics in the state, and those that he watches closely were up.
While we've been experiencing some pretty good news as it relates to the total number of people in ICUs, yesterday's number went up slightly, 3.8%. As you've seen, that number's been bouncing around 1-2%. We declined a few days here and there. It's certainly stabilizing, but yesterday we saw an increase of 3.8%. Accordingly, we saw a 3.3% increase in the total number of hospitalizations in the state of California.
So the number of cases, positive cases in the state, was up, and the number of deaths had risen 5% as well. Then, in news overnight, Santa Clara County officials confirmed two deaths from February that are earlier than the first known U.S. death, which was in Seattle. Autopsies, the officials said, confirmed the California deaths on February 6th and the 17th. We will link an article related to the timeline that was published today in the New York Times. So here we are, about 2.5 months later, and testing is still a challenge across the country, mainly because of a lack of supplies, we're told. Expanding that testing capability is a critical benchmark to reopening some of daily life. So the pressure to solve this problem is intense. Governor Gavin Newsom says at noon today, we're going to hear more details about testing in California. This is another press conference that will air live on CAP Radio. Antibody testing, meanwhile, for COVID-19 is different from that initial testing to confirm an active positive case. And that's where we're going to start the conversation in this hour. Joining me by phone is Dr. Brad Pollack, a professor of epidemiology and the chair of the Department of Public Health Sciences at UC Davis School of Medicine. He is also chair of the UC System Public Health COVID-19 Working Group. Dr. Pollack, thanks for making time for us today on Insight.
Good morning, Beth. I'm happy to be here.
So this news from overnight about the two Santa Clara deaths preceding what we had thought were the first deaths in this country from COVID-19, can you give me your reaction and what does it tell you about the virus here?
Sure. It's not entirely surprising. I think, as we're all aware, the availability of tests has been very limited and, of course, non-existent if you go back, you know, before our first index cases here in California. So it's not surprising that we will be looking at some of the posthumous cases that occurred, looking at antibody presence now for folks that died back in February, early February. So not totally surprising. And there are, of course, anecdotal reports from people that that sort of experienced these influenza-like illness symptoms that probably were COVID. Last year, there were, last flu season, we reported, I think, something like 60,000 flu-related deaths. Well, it's very possible that a substantial proportion of those may have been COVID-19 related.
Hmm. Will we in time know that picture more fully?
Well, we hope so. And again, it's interesting that almost every report you hear about trying to get back to recovery here is testing is key, testing is key. People say this over and over again.
Right.
And as you're right, there's a distinction between looking at the presence of the virus itself, and that's done with these nasopharyngeal swabs and doing PCR testing for the virus RNA itself. And that tells you that you actually have presence of virus in the back of your throat. But the problem with that, of course, is that if you test somebody today, and they're negative, tomorrow they may have a new infection or the next day. And so unless you're constantly testing people on a daily basis, you don't really know when the virus is present or not. Antibody testing is a bit different because it tells you something about your past potential exposure or infection to COVID-19. So if you've been exposed or infected, it is likely that you will develop antibodies to the virus. That takes a little time to happen. It may take a matter of a couple of days for the first set of antibodies to show up, and there's a transition over time. But the antibodies will give you a snapshot into what has happened in the past or possibly you have a present case of the disease, whereas the antigen test, which is the viral, the nasal swab, is telling you that, yes, you have virus I can detect in the back of your throat, and that's a little bit more current. I think you need to have both to sort of put together the picture. And the other thing that's important right now is even with both the viral swabs as well as antibody testing, we don't really know what happens over time. And, of course, we have some assumptions based on other viral infections, including with this class of coronaviruses, that you will develop antibodies and that in time some of those antibodies will become protective. But we don't really know for this virus. This is a different animal here. It doesn't behave like all of the other coronaviruses. So part of the gap in our knowledge is not knowing what happens over time with the shift from shedding virus to looking at antibodies and then seeing if those antibodies actually confer immunity and protection. And in particular, we're worried about this for our healthcare workers because obviously for folks that recover from an infection, we want to get them back into the workforce as quickly as possible to be able to handle the onslaught of medical needs. And without knowing this in our healthcare workers, right now we're using guidelines that are sort of based on best guess as to when you might be okay and not capable of infecting somebody else. But it's not really based on the hard science of looking at antibodies over time. And I think the longitudinal studies need to be done to be able to make that assessment.
So I referenced a New York Times article published today, and in there it talks about way back when, what, 6 or 8 weeks ago, when the federal government and the CDC had these very strict rules on who could be tested. And it cites that the initial test kits were faulty in some cases. So here we are now with antibody testing. What are the restrictions around antibody testing, the availability of it, and the accuracy of these test kits?
Yes, and we're still trying to work that out. There have been, actually even as far back as 3 or 4 weeks ago, there were people advertising having antibody tests available. These are commercial enterprises, and these were not validated. There's a number of charlatans that were advertising these. Now we are standing up the serology platform, so the testing for antibodies is called serology, and we're standing up the new platforms now that have been initially, we're doing the validations now. UC San Diego opened last week. We're opening this week at UC Davis to do high-scale serologies, and we'll be able to do anywhere from 750 a day to 1,500 of these tests a day. In terms of the quality of the test, we look at attributes such as sensitivity and specificity, and we're doing that validation right now with some of the banked blood sera that we've collected to see how it works. But it looks like we may be in the order of about 95% sensitivity. That's the ability to pick up an infection or past infection for those that really were infected. So that's very good. And the specificity is actually much higher than that. It may be in the order of 97 to 99%. So the quality of the serology tests are being looked at now and validated, but this is coming online very, very quickly. And in addition to just doing the serologic testing now, the issue is how do you roll this out in a way that's going to contribute to our knowledge about what goes on with the infection and, again, whether people are protected or not.
We might need to back up here. The viral swabs are the antigen testing for the immediate presence of the virus itself. How is an antibody test done? And if you can do that volume in a day, how long does it take to get results?
There's no swab involved. This is a blood test. And so you have antibodies in your blood, and they're picked up. Now, there are some other antibody tests looking at different immunoglobulins that may appear in other, for example, saliva. But this is primarily based on blood assay. So those can be done actually much more readily. There's not an issue with limitation of the collection material here like there is with the swabbing. And so that's a little bit better than having to do the viral antigen testing. So that will not be the limitation. And again, this is scaling up very quickly. If you recall, two weeks ago, the antigen tests were limited to some places like UC Davis, a large referral hospital. We were able to do 20 tests a day, and that was based on the CDC kits that were in short supply. And now we've got, you heard from Dr. Lebarski the other day, that we've got a limitation now with the swabs for the antigen test. But antibody testing is much easier. It's a blood draw, very small quantities of blood, to actually be able to do this. So we should be able to ramp up very quickly. But I want to caution folks to know that looking at the presence of an antibody, again, doesn't tell you that you have an active infection at this moment in time. We don't know what it actually means other than the fact that you may have been infected. If you're negative and you're surveilling a population for antibodies to sort converting and seeing that they're detected, it may not be the most sensitive way of doing that. However, for those that are infected, it is probably going to be the key to understanding what happens over time and whether people recover, whether they're going to be protected themselves from being reinfected, and of course, most importantly, whether they're capable of infecting others. That's going to be the antibody testing, and that has to be done prospectively within individuals to be able to look and profile that.
I'm talking with Dr. Brad Pollack. He is the chair of the UC System Public Health COVID-19 Working Group. We are talking about antibody testing, but it takes us into the broader issue of testing overall. We have been in this time period where test kits were limited, so somebody might have experienced the classic symptoms, the high fever, the dry cough, maybe the shortness of breath, and self-quarantined, thought they endured a run of this disease, but because of the limitation of kits, didn't go get tested. That's the kind of person who really wants to know whether the antibody is in their system or not. Is that the kind of person any health organization wants to identify too?
Yes, of course. And the fear that we have, fear, irrational fear, is that there may be a substantial proportion of people that are completely asymptomatic, that got infected, that may have been capable of spreading the virus, but never manifest any symptoms themselves. We don't know the proportion of people in the population that were completely asymptomatic. We don't know the proportion of people that developed very mild symptoms that were passed off as, you know, just having a little bit of a fever from something else, being a little hot, or having a little bit of a cough, and there's seasonal allergies that are creeping up right now, and that's causing people to have some of the same symptoms. So we don't know that, and that's why it's really important to be able to do the antibody testing to get some idea about what people's exposures were to the virus here that may have not come to attention. The other thing I'll just point out is that this is because of the non-availability of the test, I've never been in a situation where you're trying to infer what's going on with an epidemic where the only people that were tested a couple weeks ago were those that had the most severe symptoms. That is a crazy way to do it. And of course, you're going to see proportions testing positive among those people much higher than you would in the general community. So we are getting to a point now where we can do larger scale testing. You heard on Monday a little bit about the capability of doing the antigen testing going up, where now the limitation is swabs, not the limitation of the test platform itself. So we're this is evolving by the day, by the hour, in fact.
There is a lot of public attention to the push and pull between governors and the federal government, in some cases the president in particular. But as I sit here and listen to you, I think that there's a tremendous, probably off-the-radar push and pull going on between the medical community, the information that you'd like to have and feel that you could work with in terms of testing and the understanding of the pandemic, and the way your hands have been tied by, I'm going to say, not only the Trump administration, but maybe the federal guidelines overall with CDC and beyond.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up here. The virus is apolitical. It doesn't take sides. I think we have to understand this was a novel virus, and we didn't know what it was. We're talking about months here. Some of these things that we do in medicine to look at infectious agents, go back with years of technology available. And so we're dealing with something new. And when you have 20 tests a day available, and that was a limitation because it was a brand new test, the feds were trying to roll it out, what do? Well, you ration the test and you try to target those people who might benefit most. And of course, those would have been the people developing severe symptoms and needing to be hospitalized. So this is not quite a matter of laying blame on a political situation, but rather it is a novel situation that we've had to deal with. And I think that's important for people to keep in mind. It's not just a matter of somebody letting us down. I do think there have been some issues that could have been dealt with, as you heard Dr. Lebarski say on Monday, implementing the National Defense Act faster to get manufacture of these swabs and having reagents available. That may have helped. But really, we're talking about something that we didn't know about in January. So it's not quite being let down. Now, I do think there are other issues with regard to having personal protective equipment available, some of the other issues that I think government may have been slow about. I will commend our governor and the state of California. I'm very proud. I was born in L.A., lived out of the state for 26 years and moved back six years ago. And I'm incredibly proud of how the state has handled this and how the governor has really articulated the major points to people very well. I'm proud to be here.
Back to the antibody test. If a person had SARS or MERS, had something that was somehow related to a coronavirus past experience, is the antibody test sensitive and specific to this novel coronavirus so that only this, an antibody to this particular coronavirus would be identified?
Yes, absolutely. This is very much a lock and key for this virus. We've learned a lot. We know a lot about coronaviruses. It's interesting. This coronavirus has almost no cross-reactivity with the other ones. But the tests that have been available, obviously the antigen test is very accurate. It's looking for the presence of the virus itself. But the antibody tests now are also very specific to the unique characteristics of this virus. So in that sense, we're not getting cross-contamination and results that are a result of sort of past infection with other coronaviruses.
Again, I'm thinking, all right, maybe we should go back to a little bit of basic science here. How does the body create an antibody? What specifically is it in the bloodstream that will be picked up?
Well, the virus itself has actually is a combination of genetic material, that's RNA in this virus, and also proteins. The capsule, there's protein. And actually, antibodies are generally formed against proteins. So this is a foreign protein that is recognized by your immune system. That will, it's quite complicated, but that turns on the production of and the creation and production of antibodies to those proteins. So that's the whole idea of how we develop antibodies. And in fact, that is sort of the principle behind development of vaccines, is that we are able to sort of mimic parts of the protein of these viruses that cause the body to create antibodies without actually having an active infection. That's how a vaccine works. So it's really the presence of the viral proteins that initiate the development of antibodies.
When you said the antibody test could be done at a rate of 750, maybe 1,500 a day, I'm not sure I got the answer to how soon the results would be available.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't. And that within a matter of a couple of hours. It's not
hours.
Days. Yes, hours.
Okay. Yeah. A couple times you've referenced my conversation on Monday with Dr. David Lebarski, who, by the way, is the chief executive officer of UC Davis Health. I want to go back to that conversation to explore one point that is about this antibody testing. So we've recued a piece. Let's take a listen.
We're about to start antibody testing, and we have the capacity to test about 1,000 patients a day. Starting this week. But we're going to start with our own healthcare workforce in order to make sure that we understand the spread of the disease, not only in our own community, but in our most important community, which is our employees, our trainees, our patients, our faculty, and to really get a handle on what the level of immunity might be both within our institution and within the community.
So that was Dr. David Lebarski on Monday. I think everyone can understand why this effort would start within the healthcare community. But beyond that, should groups be targeted for this testing as it's rolled out? And at what point is it available to everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. The answer is yes, it should be targeted. In fact, I'm one of the principal investigators, along with a couple other colleagues, of our companion research study we're trying to get started this week. As we roll out serology testing for our employees, we also want to have them sign up for our observational study to look at changes in antibodies over time. So we're getting that geared up at the same time that we're starting to roll out the testing for our healthcare workforce. But in fact, you're absolutely correct. There are other groups that need to be targeted in priority order. And in fact, another group is first responders. They're critically important. And they are also, like healthcare workers, at higher risk of being exposed to the virus. So that is a very important population. The second population are patients in the hospital. We do not have, other than during their hospitalization, we don't really have the antibody profile profiles going forward. And once they're discharged, for those that recover, we don't know what's going on with their antibodies. So that's a second group. Third group for us are other essential workers. And, of course, UC Davis, we have not only the medical center in Sacramento, we have our large campus in Davis. And we have a number of workers that must be there to keep the place operating. And we actually have 600 students that had no place to go. They had to stay on campus. A lot of these were international students. They couldn't travel back home. Others don't have other base homes to go to. So we are concerned about protecting those populations. And then lastly, but extremely importantly, is the community. We need to know what's going on in the community and be able to establish the antibody profiles for folks in the community. That not only as a cross-sectional view of a one-shot deal to do the blood test, but actually to be able to follow up a number of people and look at folks that go from being negative to positive. In other words, looking at new cases that develop in the community. So those are all incredibly important groups. And again, we're trying to roll out the healthcare workers first because they're an important population. They're also more convenient for us to actually get this thing started since we have the test equipment there at the medical center. We are going to start there.
So testing interfacing with the reopening of life in general, can I get your sense of how much disease you think is in the general community? And we're too early to look at the other side of this, but how long is this going to be present and a driving factor in how we live?
Yes, that's a great question, Beth. So I think there have been some initial studies, a study done at Stanford to look at Santa Clara County, where they went into the community and tried to surveil the proportion of folks that actually had antibodies. They had estimates, and again, there's a range given because of some of the limitations of how you do this methodologically, of 2.5% to maybe 5% of their population they picked up. Now, they used a methodology that involved looking at Facebook, using Facebook to have people sign up and volunteer, and there are some limitations in terms of survey methodology using that. USC has just done a study, and they're estimating seroprevalence rates in the 1.5% range, maybe up to 4%. We don't know for our community here in the greater Sacramento area. We don't know what that is. These sorts of seroprevalence studies are absolutely necessary. They're fairly expensive to pull off because you've got to be able to go and get a large number of people to volunteer to participate. So that is an issue going forward. And I think the thing that's important, though, so let's say the range may be lower here in the Sacramento area. Maybe we've got 1.5% seropositive rate. But what that really means is that we've got anywhere from 98 to 99% of the population that are susceptible. They have not been infected. And that's the thing that drives an epidemic, and it drives new cases from developing. You know, until you have this herd immunity where you've got a large percentage of the population with antibodies and are protected, you really have this threat going on. So as we get back to quote-unquote normal or start recovering and opening up things, we're going to have to be very cognizant of the fact that the threat is there. The majority of the population are still susceptible. And until we actually have a vaccine, I don't think we're going to get back to a full normal as we had, months ago. I think the other thing that is very important to point out here is the concept of the threat is really important because we're worried about mortality. We're worried about people that go on ventilators and get into the ICU beds. If we had effective treatments that are going to prevent us from advancing to needing to be hospitalized and dying, I think that will also change the perception of the risk in the general population. We do live with a certain amount of influenza threat all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We have vaccines and we have some therapy for those. But really, in this particular instance, we have no effective therapies yet established. We're working on that very, very hard right now with a number of clinical trials that are running now looking at antiviral therapy, convalescent syrup therapy as well. So these are going to be important in terms of the dynamics of how we return to normal. And I think that, again, until we have a total vaccine, I do a lot of global health and international travel. I was supposed to be in Nepal at the beginning of April. I can't imagine getting on an airplane flying overseas for the next year and a half to 2 years until there's an effective vaccine. But that doesn't mean that parts of our lives won't get back to normal or at least more normal.
Hmm. Well, you said a lot in this conversation. It was very interesting and very informative. I'm, again, glad that you made time for us today on Insight. Take care, and I look forward to another conversation in the future.
My pleasure, Beth. Thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
That's Bye-bye. Dr. Brad Pollack. He's a professor of epidemiology and chair of the Department of Public Health Sciences at UC Davis School of Medicine. He's also the chair of the UC System's Public Health COVID-19 Working Group. Governor Newsom's press conference is at noon today. Up next, we're going to check in with Placerville, hoping for some loosening of the stay-at-home orders, and tap on the matter of the delay in the trout fishing opener in a few counties. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.